Apologies to Sal, my favorite album title. Here we go. I got to take a deep breath. Hit Parade, Lemonade, Supersonic Spree. That could be one of yours. I mean, it's just, it's so you. That was Rocket to the Alien Planet. I just thought of that. It's just like you. Charing Cross from Linfield. They started in Linfield High School. Their first record came out last year. It's so good in 2021. It's called No Batteries. That was Unread. The great Chuck Berry, believe it or not, a late career record, came out in 2017. The record's just called Chuck, and that was Wonderful Woman. And, you know, Sal and I were talking about how good he sounds at whatever age he's at. I mean, the guitar, the voice, you had to listen for a second to tell it was him. But that was Chuck Berry and Wonderful Woman from a record called Chuck. And our friends, our pals in Stupidity from the rock and roll capital of the world in Stockholm, Sweden. That was from a Red on Red Records compilation that came out last year called Home Fires Burning, a holiday compilation from Red on Red Records. That was Reindeer Twist featuring the great Keith Strang. All right, at 10:01 in the morning, I've made mention of my guest who is here. And we've been working at this for a long time, and it's nice to see you smiling across the desk from me, finally. I mean, I've seen you, you know, perform all over the place back when I was interning in radio at WBCN. Your first band, the Stompers, was everywhere. So I felt like I knew you. And over the past couple of years, now I do. And it was tough getting you to come to be here. I mean, I know you do a lot of media. You're on radio a lot. But welcome to Sal Bagley. I'm so happy to see you here.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah. It is a treat to be here with you, man.
Yeah, and you know, I always talk about it, but you mentioned it when you came in about what a great vibe this place has.
It's like a museum.
Yeah.
A lot of these things, these records and tapes and carts, they need to be artifact. You know, mm-hmm. they're very important. You know,
it's a wonderful playground for people like us.
I've been coming up here since the 70s.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It used to be on the second floor, I think. Do you remember that?
I do not recall.
Yeah. Floors, details.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, as soon as the Stompers started, we were going up to college radio, and Tufts was one of the first, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm so lucky to be here that they let, you know, quote-unquote community members come in here in a free-form environment. It's just the best thing in the world. So let me just sort of talk a little bit about, a lot about you. You have been in my purview for a long time. And although a lot of people feel like they know you, I want to sort of use this hour and let people really find out where you came from so we can understand how you've become the musician that you are today. So you started at this young, you've been quoted as saying, there was always a guitar in my house growing up. And I learned my first chords at a very young age, which was 12, believe it or not. You said around 1968 or 69, your parents gave you a realistic two-track, reel-to-reel tape recorder from Radio Shack for Christmas. What a great Christmas gift. I also couldn't wait to get a recorder when I was a kid. But this is cool. Your older brother showed you how to bounce, quote-unquote, and gave you more. It gave you a way to use sort of multi-track recording on that thing so that you could include harmonies, you could include another guitar on there. That was fantastic. And you mentioned this, and I love this. You said that you were inspired by a triumvirate of family members. You grew up in a house that was very musical, didn't you?
Yes, yes.
Lucky.
My dad was a wonderful guitar player, and he taught me my first chords probably when I was 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. You know.
Now you're a junior, aren't you? Sal Jr.
Technically,
yeah.
But I don't know if it ever got to my birth certificate because I don't have a middle name. So my dad did. So it's kind of a weird thing.
Right.
But my dad and my grandfather on my mother's
side. Your maternal
side,
grandfather.
Yeah. He was quite a guy, man. Oof.
Yeah, you spoke quite a bit about him. You know, first of all, your dad. You had said that he is the first one to show you where to place your hands on the fret.
That's true.
And you played your first chords with him.
Absolutely.
Do you remember the first song that he played lead and you played rhythm?
I do. The Sheik of Araby. It's an old standard tune, but you know, he listened to Django Reinhardt a lot, so it was in that style. So he played all the melody and the solo and stuff, and he would just yell out the chords.
I see.
G, A minor, you know, and I loved it.
How fun is that?
I loved it, you know. It was just a magical thing to me. And, yeah, you know, and my grandfather was sort of like a... See, my dad was a great musician, but he was very... He didn't care to do it in front of people too much. You know, he had that side to him. My grandfather on the other side was a ham. You know, he'd get up there and just, you know, tear the audience apart, you know, so.
About your grandfather, you said, and he also lived on the same street in Eastie that you grew up in, Paris Street.
Yes.
So that's nice having the family close. Listen to this. Sal's maternal grandfather was a song and dance man. How cool is that? You know, he'd also been a band leader and a drummer, right? So you get everybody out there, you're getting a picture of where this guy comes from. Sal, you said about him, he was the guy that was always asked to come up and sing a few tunes at every function that you ever attended. It might have been at the Sons of Italy or Lombardo's. I remember Lombardo's. And here's the last thing you said. He always, without fail, would bring the house down.
It's true. Yeah, he did it, you know.
What a great experience.
You know, I hope in some way that I took that from him and did the same. But it was always magical, and we were always full of pride to see him.
So that's two of the triumvirate. My second grade math skills tell me there's one more. The third was your older brother, and this is very cool, you know. I'm the older brother in my family, so I did this for my brothers, my two younger brothers. We're separated by 2 years. But he played for you and told you all about the bands of the day.
Absolutely.
The Beatles, the Kinks, you know, Beach Boys. I can see you and your brother sitting there in one of your bedrooms and just spinning this thing, and him sort of showing you the way the record albums used to be, the awesome words that came with it. You could look at the images. I can see you guys just sort of...
And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. I can remember the Meet the Beatles record, him turning it over and covering their names and saying, okay, who's this?
Oh, man.
Oh, that's John Lennon.
How did you do? You knew?
Yeah. I was a maniac. Yeah, I knew.
That's me.
You know, and the same with the love of the Beach Boys and all that, you know. There was AM radio.
That's it. WRKO.
Yep.
Dale Dorman.
RKO, MEX. Yep. And there's 8 years between my brother and I. So, you know, that actually worked out good.
Yeah.
You know, so... You know, like I like to say this story, like in 65, when I'm like 8 or whatever.
Right.
You know, he'd come home with a Bob Dylan single, you know, and say like, hey, listen to this, you know, and it'd be like a Rolling Stone. And
you loved it because he loved it.
Well, yeah, I just loved it because it made me feel something, you know. I don't know why, you know, it just, I just connected with that music and... It took me someplace.
You just said something that I have to comment on, because I try to tell people what it is about this thing, music. And I've said to people, I said, I can't imagine, and this is true, I can't imagine a day going by when I don't hear some kind of music and listen to something, because it's just me. I can't imagine it.
Right.
And I know you're the same way without even saying, are you? Because I know you are.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I don't know what it is either.
No, and maybe that's good. It's good to not know what it is sometimes, you know. So I get asked the question a lot of times, like, how do you write a song? Like, what's your... And I say, you know, the best part of it is the mystery of it. There's a huge piece of it that's a mystery. And that's beautiful, you know. The other thing about music, especially when I was growing up, is there was a sense of wonder and magic, you know, this sound that's coming out of this little radio and then a phonograph, you know. And if I should ever lose that, then it'll be time to hang it up.
No,
you know? So until that day happens, I'm just going to keep on, you know, making things up and searching for the mystery.
That's what it is. It's making things up, but you know, you have a way. You're a storyteller. You know, lyrics are, you're all about lyrics. And somehow you're able to encompass that with melody and whatever. And that's a songwriter. You know, I mean, if a bus should run over us, I don't know why I remember that lyric, but, you know, so simple. But the first time I heard you sing that, I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't know why. And you must have cackled a little when you came up with that.
Well, that's from Zombie Moon.
Yeah.
If a bus should run over us, yeah. I suppose it wouldn't hurt as much.
Right.
As if I had to walk this world without you. Well, you know, I also thought for a second, I said, well, that's a little bit like that. There's a line by the Smiths that's something like that. If a double-decker bus should run over us. So it's different than that. But the idea was, Zombie Moon is basically a love song. You know, it's wrapped in kind of Halloweenish monsters and gory things, you know.
But the whole bus thing works then.
Underneath, it's a love song. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for thinking about that song, Mike.
And like I said, you know, I came to loving lyrics later in life, believe it or not. I'm grabbed by melody.
Yep.
And it came later in life for me to realize, oh, I really should figure out what that song's about. And it changes everything. It does. And for some reason, I didn't realize that. I don't know. But I love lyrics now. So let's get back to your wonderful neighborhood that I'm discovering through reading about you, East Boston, Paris Street. You had mentioned about sounds coming out of radios and coming out of different things that just are magical. And in your neighborhood, you had sounds coming out of basements.
Oh, yeah. Right after that, you know, I'm sure there were bands before it, but right after the Beatles came, right after the Sullivan Show, it I think of it as like right after that, every cellar had a band rehearsing it.
Uh-huh.
You know, my brother was in a band, so you know he was 14, 15.
And you went to his rehearsals?
Oh yeah, man. You know that was
fun is that?
That was unbelievable. That was, you know, just staring at all these guitars and amps and drums, and they're playing all the songs of the day. You know. And then in 65, he put out a record. That was unheard of back then. You know, today, you go in your basement, you make a CD, and all of a sudden you have a record
out. It couldn't be more different now.
Yeah. Right. But back then, at the height of, you know, the British invasion and all that stuff, his band, The Strangers, had put a record out, a local record, you know. And that was just crazy, you know.
You must have
they were in high school, you know what I mean?
I mean, you must have just looked at him like, wow. And was that the time when you started, you know, cruising the basements and watching your brother and, you know, listening to records with him? Was that when you sort of said, I got to do that. I know what I want to do.
I think I knew it already on some level. I mean,
maybe at 8 or 9, sitting there with your dad.
You know, I think certainly when I went to see A Hard Day's Night, he took me the summer of 64. You know, I definitely remember going, that looks like something I'd have fun doing.
And it wasn't out of reach because you saw what your brother did, and you saw what your father did, and you saw what your grandfather did.
Right.
So it wasn't out of reach.
Right, and nobody said to me, oh, no, you know, you can't do that.
Right.
You know, you should, you know, nobody said that.
You should be a doctor or a lawyer. Nobody.
No, I don't think anybody in my family said that to me. I wouldn't have listened to them anyway. But
yeah.
I just, you know, I think about it a lot. Being a kid, and I sort of manifested this thing. I'm going to be a musician and I'm going to make records and I'm going to play. And a lot of kids said that. A lot of my friends, you know, at that time, because that was the thing to do, said it. And then a lot of them stop and they go on to other lives. And then some kept going for a while and then it went off. And I just didn't stop.
If it's in you, it's in you, and it's not going to. I mean, of course they all couldn't do it because not everybody can do that. You know, your dad was a band leader. Your grandfather was your dad was a song and dance man. So singing was something that I was always very self-conscious about. When was the first time that you sang in public? And did you ever have a problem with, like, oh, what if I suck?
I don't think I thought that.
See,
those things come later in life sometimes. You know, when you're a kid, I don't know.
Oh, interesting, I guess. Yeah, as a kid, you sort of are fearless.
I'm talking about really young, you know. I think I can remember a banquet at the Sons of Italy, and the band took a break, and my brother got up there with a guitar, and I went up, and I sang Mr. Tambourine Man, you know, what lyrics I could possibly remember, you know, and it just felt grand, you know. It was wonderful. I don't think anyone was even listening, you know. It was everybody was talking and milling around, but it was just wonderful to be on a stage, and you know, be singing a song like that.
Yeah. See, hearing you talk about these memories and seeing you talk about these memories is awesome, because I, you know, for those out there in radio land, he's just beaming. It's everything to you.
It was that sense of wonder and magic, man. That's the stuff that I've been chasing my whole life, you know. And as you get older, you know, life comes in and trips you up sometimes, you know. And sometimes you can lose that. It's easy to lose that, and you know, I don't even want to go down that road because it's sad. But and a few times, you know, I went into those dark places, and the thing that always got me out of them, always, was to return to that, always.
And you know, you have, being a creative person, you've got to deal with that in some way, and I'm sure that getting back to it, putting out your later records about things in childhood that we're going to talk about, you know, things about you were always fascinated with amusement parks and carnivals and that kind of thing, and you had some scary kid experiences about that, you know. But and we'll talk about that when we talk about the bands. But you know, I know what you mean. You had, as a creative person, you've got to get it out, and that's, you're so fortunate to be able to do that. So a little bit more about your fascinating neighborhood of Paris Street. You mentioned a couple of memories and places that were there. There was a music shop, Central Music Shop.
The record store.
Yep.
Yeah, we had a record store down in the center of town on Bennington Street. And it was run by a couple. I think it was Mike and Ann.
Oh, wow.
I think, yeah. You know, that was like, you know, whenever I went by that shop, it was like looking into Santa Claus land, you know. It was like all those records. And I remember going in and looking at things and just...
Do you remember if Mike and Ann recommended something to you that you'll never forget?
No, I don't think they recommended anything to me, because I would go in, most of the time I'd go in knowing
what you wanted,
what single I was buying, you know, and see, then later albums, you know.
I asked that because I had a similar experience. I grew up in Haverhill, and for me it was John at Record Village. And for us kids that went in, he would recommend, and I never forgot. One day he led me over to a new release, and he said, "This is Steely Dan. It's Asia. You need to take this home with you." Oh, never forgot it.
Yeah. No, that's great. Great album as well. But yeah, no, they didn't do that. But I'll tell you what he would do. If you said, "I want you know, this single," he'd say, "Do you want to listen to it?" Because they had the turntable right there at the counter.
Yeah.
He's like, "Do you want to hear a little bit of it?" The real clear story, picked image I have in my head is going to buy Paperback Writer in Rain, 1966. My brother sent me down with change. "Here's some change. Go get the new Beatles single." And I went in. I want Paperback Writer Rain. He says, "Do you want to hear any of it?" I said, "No."
Oh, my bro sent me. I'm all set.
I ran home and that record today, you know, that's the beauty of music. Like when I listen to those two songs, I'm transported back to that period of time.
Yep.
And those songs don't age to me. They sound as fresh and brilliant today as they did then.
Yeah. Funnily enough, I completely get that, because I play stuff that, you know, it's from, you know, way back when, and to me, it's just as new as it ever was.
That's a special thing.
Very, very much so. Let's talk a little bit about the Sacred Heart School Playground. A lot of good stuff happens on a playground. Did you meet a friend who you would go to the record store with on that playground? You know, was it a place that you just...
So I didn't go to Sacred Heart School. You know, I went to public school.
But you used their playground.
Oh, it was right. It was right up. It was, you know.
And what's the significance of the playground?
Well, I think it's just that period of time. You know, I can remember all the kids who went to school. I got some good friends that I'm still friends with today that went to that school as opposed to the public school, and they had to dress up, and you know, and the girls had to wear the plaid skirts, and those are the memories I have of that, you know.
The things that are in your mind's eye.
Yeah.
You know,
and I use those.
Yeah,
I use those in songs, and especially today, you know. I didn't do that too much with my first band, but I think that's where I went lyrically as I...
I think so.
Moved on.
I'd alluded to that. You know, you're using that imagery and putting that into your lyrics and work. So I had mentioned the purveying memories of things like carnivals and amusement parks.
Yep.
Paragon Park, I remember that. You know, there was Pleasure Island. I live in Wakefield, so I know where that used to be.
Yeah, yeah, I remember Pleasure Island.
And the Revere Beach Boulevard.
Absolutely.
That's still around, but it ain't the same.
No. It was alive back then in the 60s. It was alive. When I was a kid, I'd go there with my brother and my family and walk up and down the boulevard. And there were nightclubs. You know, you'd hear music as you went by. You'd look in. There'd be bands in sharkskin suits playing R&B. You know, and I'd look in and I'd say, man, this is it, man, you know. And, you know, all the rides and the lights, and it was such a wonderful time.
Yeah, as a kid growing up in those times, and I guess it's still the same now, but it's different. But it still happens that in the summer, you know, that's when the carnival comes around.
Yep.
And every kid, you know, has certain feelings about it. Some kids are terrified by it.
Yep.
You know, clowns. You know?
Absolutely.
And it's different experiences. And you had an uncle that used to tell you stories about when the circus came to town, specifically the circus. And I read in some stuff that you sent me that as a kid, you just talking about how you reacted to that, it caused you to have some dreams. You know, some dreams, like one in particular when you and your dad went to ride on a roller coaster. And it was riding really fast, and then it derailed. And you had a dream when it was going off and spinning into the darkness, and it was kind of terrifying to you. So you had said that you like circuses, carnivals not so much, and amusement parks are somewhere in the middle there. Well, do you remember that dream?
Not specifically, but amusement parks, and right. They have a lot of joy to them, but they also, for me, for the way I my perception, I also feel a bit of sadness around them, you know, which is why I named that particular record Music for Abandoned Amusement Parks,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
But it's always been that way with me, you know, parades. You know, they everybody's enjoying them, and yet there's something about them, something about the sound of the music that affects me in a different way.
Let me remind you of a quote. I'll just interrupt you for just a second, because this is relevant. I'll remind you of a quote that you had said, the lyricism of all three, and the three being circuses, carnivals, amusement parks, the lyricism of all three stir in every kid a suspension of disbelief and a desire to be startled, invoking the notion that a group of vagabonds were coming to town to ply its folk with craft, love, and tricks, and therefore to essentially stop time. And you said this was as old as storytelling itself. That says an awful lot about your feelings about those things.
Yeah. I think, Mike, that might have been a... I don't know if I said that or if someone wrote that about the music.
All right.
I don't know if I'd be that clear. Oh. I get so muddled on how I want to explain how I feel about those things. But that's an accurate statement about the music from that I was trying to get across with that record, for sure.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So let's talk now that we know this wonderful place that you came from in East Boston, and you know, the musical family that you grew up in. Let's just talk a little bit about what you, because I always ask people who are here for the first time with me, tell me about some influences, some bands, some songs, you know. And a lot of people go, oh man, how am I supposed to pick, you know? But you did, you picked a couple, and some we've mentioned that you had talked about your brother, and we mentioned it when you went to the music store. You had talked about some of these. And the Kinks were huge. The Beach Boys, I read that you used to run home to listen to the Beach Boys live. Beach Boys live in concert.
Yeah, after school.
Yep.
Air guitar.
And of course, air guitar, The Who, Quadrophenia. Now, you mentioned about Quadrophenia, it's the most important. The Who, the most important. Why are The Who and that particular recording, Quadrophenia, so important? You said that, by the way, when we were talking a couple weeks ago.
I think,
give you context.
Yeah, yeah. Out of the, that was 73, you know, I was in high school. And that record just somehow spoke to me. I liked how it made me feel. There was some darkness in there. There was some joy. Mm. I mean, I think, you know, Who's Next was really important to me, too, but and Tommy to some degree, but Quadrophenia, out of all the Who's music, was the one that spoke to me that much. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was a particular track that you mentioned that we'll play.
Oh, yeah.
Called The Punk and the Godfather.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's just, yeah. That day, that was the one. I mean, it could be, you know, it could be Dr. Jimmy.
It so
could be,
well said. Yeah, it changes, could, doesn't it?
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, recently I did an interview where somebody asked me, you know, so what are your favorite three bands? What are your Desert Island Discs? I said, well, I'll tell you what they are right now, and then ask me in an hour. You know, it's true.
Such an important distinction to make, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So the Kinks.
Yeah,
the Kinks. That's on so many, Desert Island Discs for people, so many. And you mentioned from a great record they did called Something Else, that was Waterloo Sunset.
Incredible!
It's incredible.
That song, lyrically and the sonic, the sound of the production on that song, instantly transports me someplace else.
That was 1967. The production of 1967.
Yeah,
it's quite a thing.
It's just something about it, just something about that track, the way they, the way they brought it in. It really, it's beautiful. And you know, lyrically, it makes me feel like I'm in London, you know, like I'm in the UK with these guys. So, I love that. I love that idea where you could actually visually bring somebody someplace in a song.
When music can bring you to a different place, then you know.
Yeah, Ray can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it Davis or Davies? Depends on the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and the other one we had mentioned before too, and this is on every, I would say it's on everybody's list, the Beach Boys, and it's the concert that you ran home from school to listen to, the Beach Boys in concert.
Yep.
You mentioned a song that I don't know, but we're going to play it, from Surf's Up, called Till I Die. I love learning new stuff.
Yeah.
Talk about Till I Die.
Well, it's just a beautiful and sad song that Brian Wilson wrote. You know, and that's the later on Beach Boys, you know, and it took me
71.
Yeah. It took me some time to get behind that stuff, and I found that it was really, really beautiful. You know, because I enjoy all the early Beach Boy hits and all that. But those records there, Surf's Up and just amazing stuff.
Before I play those, I just want to talk about Those three songs in particular, you know, two of them, two of the bands, The Who, The Kinks, you know, there's some similarity there. It's a genre. I said, okay, that's what influenced him. But then the Beach Boys, they're so different and yet so impactful.
Yeah.
They didn't try to copy what was going on. I mean, to do what they did and break through, unbelievable.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, he's rare. Brian is a rare, beautiful bird.
Bird.
You know, he heard that stuff in his head. You know, we the Stompers were fortunate enough to tour with them. And I would talk to Carl mostly. And I was when I spoke to him, I was a fan. I wasn't like the guy in the other, but I was just like, so Carl, what about this song? Tell me about this. And he was always very, very, very kind.
Oh, great.
And he would spend time and tell me about how Brian heard everything all done in his head. Mm. And he'd just come into the studio and tell everybody what to do.
I would imagine that's not the way it works for you. You don't hear it all in your head first and then
I kind of
transcribe
do.
It. You do.
I
was wrong.
No, I kind of do. I kind of have an idea, you know, but I might be, while I'm recording, I might make an error and then it'll be like, oh, that's cool. Let me do that, you know.
Right.
Something like that.
That's right. But the good mistakes. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's spin those three influences of yours. I'll start with The Kinks and Waterloo Sunset, then that Beach Boys song, and then we'll go into The Punk and The Godfather. Here are The Kinks from Something Else at WMFO in Medford. We'll be back after this.
Sunset, they are in paradise. watching movies, trying to find the feelers. You only see what we show you. We're the slaves of the phony leaders. Breathe the air we have from you. I'm the guy in the sky, flying high, flashing eyes. No surprise, I told lies. I'm a punk in the gutter. Woo! I'm the new president in our crew and our bed. Don't you know, don't it show? I'm the punk with the stutter.
In empty rows, it all belongs to me, you know.
WMFO in Medford, 10:42 in the morning. I'm Mike, here with Sal Baglio. Hi, Sal.
Hello.
So we just heard three of your influences, Waterloo Sunset by the Kinks, Till I Die by the Beach Boys, and The Punk and the Godfather from Quadrophenia. Wonderful stuff, and I just want to tell the listening audience that it makes my heart filled to see you singing along with each one of them and just, you know, beaming from ear to ear. That was great. So let's talk a little bit in the time we have left about the bands that you've been in. And one, if my math is correct, 1977 to 2021, Stompers, 44 years. Yeah.
Yep.
You and Steve Gilligan, who's now, you know, playing around with John Macy.
Yes.
And Hummingbird Syndicate.
Yeah.
Dave Friedman was on keyboards, Jeremy Brown and Dave Fox. You guys just did it. That's how I got to know you, and so many of us got to know you.
Yeah.
You know, and that ended last year. You went out big with a last concert.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, it was time, and I'm glad it wasn't. You know, I'm glad we weren't playing in a room with eight people.
Yeah.
Left and trying to recapture anything from yesterday, which is something that we never wanted to do. We just wanted to just be who we were. But it was time. It was time because I had all this new music that I wanted to do, and you know, and so did Steve.
Yeah.
Steve too.
Yeah.
And but we're all friends. We're all brothers. We still love each other very much. And it was a great ride. It just a grand ride.
And we went on it with you guys, and we thank you for it.
Well, Mm-hmm. You know, the last new song we did was 1985.
Yeah,
so.
you said that to me before. It's amazing. So, I know, but you know, and you didn't need any more. You know, kudos to you and your kid bedroom in East Boston for writing all that stuff back then and having such longevity. All right, Amplifier Heads beaming up to 2019. Amp Heads is, you know, it's really, I guess, the you and Ducky, you know, pretty much the basic band, but you've had other people. I'll just mention them just to give them their due. You've also had Jeff Keithline, the great Brad Helene on bass, I would imagine. Paul Armstrong, who I know from 145 and the Flash Cubes, just, you know, great power pop bands, both of them.
Yeah.
He did some background vocals, as did Margie Finer, and Marty Richards, who plays drums with you today in some live gigs.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that was Amp Heads in 2019. You had four records. The first one was Louda, which is spelled in Bostonese, L-O-U-D-A-H. Then followed up with what we mentioned before, Music for Abandoned Amusement Parks in 2020. Then in 2021, there were Saturn Aliens. And you had mentioned that you were hired to do a show called They Came to Rock.
Yep.
And you can see about it at theycametorock.com. And it's a show about aliens coming to rock, because what else would they do? It was during the pandemic, and you wrote 10 songs for that show. One of those songs really struck you, and you repurposed that.
Yeah.
You know, Space Cadet.
I just kept writing in that bag. That's where Saturn Aliens
came from.
Yeah.
And then the latest record in this year, 2022, Rectifier, Space Cadet ended up on there. And so that was Amp Heads. You've been very busy with that. I'm sure you've got a lot more to do.
I do.
With that band.
Yeah.
Peppermint Kicks. Really, you and the great Dan Kopko. How did you guys sort of get together and say, hey, let's make a band?
You know, we met at a gig that we were both playing on, and, you know, we were introduced to each other and exchanged, you know, emails and whatnot. And then down the line, Dan sent me a tune. I think it was Johnny D's from the Peppermint Kicks record. He sent that to me and said, I got an idea. You know, do you hear anything? And I put some guitar on it, sent it back, and he liked it. And so I said, well, I got something. I can't remember which tune it was, if it was Hey Fanzine or one of my tunes. And I said, what do you hear for this? You know, and he loved it, and he sent it back with some good stuff on it. So we just said, well, why don't we make a record?
Yeah.
You know? And that's how I also met Lou over at Rumbar, you know, because Dan had a relationship with him.
Rumbar Records, yeah.
Yeah, and so Peppermint Kicks came out there, and then when I was finishing up my next Amp Heads record, I talked to Lou, and he's been really, really good. His energy is good.
Cool. And, well, I love that you're playing with Dan, because he's such a talented dude. And I saw you guys, you may remember, at the Square Root. It was just the two of you with a guitar.
Yeah.
Boy, that was fun.
Yeah.
You know, you guys just tore it up. All right. So let's play a song from each of those bands, starting with something some of you may not have heard. It's a live version of the Stompers. And it's just, I picked Never Tell an Angel because this one charted. This one was on Billboard.
It did.
I think it went to number 88, man. That's pretty good.
With a bullet.
Well, yeah. All right, so we're going to start with that from the Stompers. We'll play a couple from some of the other bands we mentioned, Amp Heads, Peppermint Kicks, and we'll be back, and Sal's going to play live at WMFO.
We'll be right back. She left town sipping with precision. Sweet lips on the television. Skull and crossbones, breaking my stones. She left home just an hour before. I saw Miss Jones on the cover of the Rolling Stone. Rock Center Jones, she's a queen of Hollywood Heights. That bird has flown. Rock Center Jones, Rock Center Jones. A two-tone bruiser thrown in the back of a police cruiser. Ringing my phone saying, baby, come on. She left home just the night before. A little Miss Jones on the cover of Rolling Stone. A rock set of Jones, she's a queen of Hollywood Heights. Keep me in the sky. This rock set of Jones.
WMFO 10:57 in the morning, and Mike and Sal are here along with our friend Kirsten. Hi, Kirsten.
Hi.
From Something About the Women.
I don't have headphones on, and I thought you just cut the song off.
Oh, well, surprise. So
amazing
anyway,
to be here in front of Sal Bagley.
Yeah, it's cool, right?
Amazing. Yeah. You know, the first time I ever came into WMFO, Mike was here with Martina Luna and Frank Iafola, who are huge fans.
Oh, he knows Frank and Martha.
Yes, of course you do. So, I mean, they wax poetic. We all do at WMFO, Markskin Radio, and WMWM, but it's lovely to be here across from you. So
same here. It's my pleasure.
Are we going to hear a live song?
We can hear a live song. Yeah, we're going a little overtime. Thank you, Kirsten.
We'll go overtime.
Just
and
a little bit.
Sal Baglio live. Why not?
Yep, and I'll just say that last Peppermint Kick song, Roxetta Jones, we were all like, because it's such a fun song. Congratulations on that one. You and Dan, Sal, that was fantastic.
Thank you.
Just
man.
Great. So I wanted you to end, and I really appreciate your doing so, with a song that you wrote called Home Again. It's on the Butcher, Baglio, and Estes. And I want you to do this because this is what we've been talking about all morning. What is it about music that it does this to you? It grabs you by the heartstrings, and you're a storyteller in what you do. And I want everybody to listen to the lyrics, and I hope that the wonderful nostalgia goes out over the airwaves, and everybody gets a tear to their eye, remembering about things in the past. So I give you Sal Baglio. Thank you so much for being here. This is Home Again.
Thanks so much, Mike. Yeah, this song. People say you can't go home again. But I think you can. When the clock strikes backwards and you're spinning round, and you wake up back in your hometown, everybody that was gone we'll be back around when we go home.